We cannot let their voices stifle our cause. This political crisis puts our head in their jaws. History is upon us. We've seen this before. We can never allow freedom to exit our shore. Good afternoon and welcome to the Trump Chronicle. I'm your host, Ray Brookstein, also known as Ray Ray. The namesake of the show is taken from two books that I authored that chronicle the Trump presidency through poetry. All the events, and they're coming fast and furious. And my goal is to invite guests from different walks of life to really take a look at the issues and shed light on these events. So let's get started on the bus here. One of the things that's really upset me greatly over the last 3 years since Donald Trump walked down the escalator, whatever it was the felonious and insulting characterizations that he's the new Adolf Hitler. In my mind, nothing could be further from the truth. You talk about manufactured news. That's probably one of the more hideous characterizations that I've seen. The rise of Adolf Hitler in Nazi Germany is so evil. And at the same time, he masterminded a plan to take over the world, not just Germany, but everyone. So my point today is we live in a democracy, a democratic or a republic, however it's considered, a constitutional republic with a Bill of Rights. I'm going to go over his 10 un-Bill of Rights, in effect, taking control of the people through fear. So before I introduce my guest for today, I want to read a poem I wrote a few months back. It's called Death of a Party. From when I was young, by 21 and a half, I always voted for Democrats, or my peers, they would laugh. We never debated it. As far as I knew, that was the party from the people's point of view. JFK was my hero. I remember the day. I was a boy in fifth grade in downtown Dallas fell prey. McGovern and Muskie, Carter and Bill, Barry out of nowhere, then the Hillary pill. Something terrible's happened. They're lost in a maze. Someone kidnapped the party. Tragic, like a Shakespearean play. I feel so ashamed at the way that they act. The party I love, now there's no turning back. I could never imagine, it frazzles my mind to think that a citizen is now last on the line. They want to hijack our country and give it away, brainwash our children. Our flags we cannot display. We're at a fork in the road. One way is a dead end. Time to take the right turn until our last breath we'll defend. I'd like to introduce my guest for today. Lori Mazurek has a bachelor's degree in political science from the University of Pittsburgh, and she's a former equestrian team member. Her family lived through the Nazi regime of terror that I'm referring to, and she also has quite a large Twitter following. So welcome, Lori. How you doing out there today?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thank you for having me, Ray.
Well, it's my pleasure. And, you know, I was looking on a historical calendar, and just a few months back, it was the 80-year anniversary of Kristallnacht. And you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
That was the night where the SS stormed all of the Jewish-owned businesses, synagogues, churches, and destroyed them, shattered the glass. Thus, the name became Kristallnacht.
That is so shameful when you think about what was done to the Jewish population. It's unbelievable. And the fact that people don't realize or don't even believe it happened, it just boggles my mind. How can you not know that happened? I don't know. Just that amazes me.
So let me ask you, why is it so important for you to tell the story of your family?
I think because of the fact, if history is not recognized, it is doomed to repeat itself. Right now, in watching what's going on politically in this country, Hitler's regime was a socialist regime, and it's a failed policy anywhere it's been. And the fact that the Democrat Party is going after the president and referring to his policies as Hitler-type policies is absurd, because it's completely the opposite. As if everything they say is opposite of what really is, yet people follow it, they eat it up, and they believe it. And I think it's dangerous, because the fact that it does lean that way can lead our country right back to that same position. And I think that that's a slap in the face to anybody who fought during World War II for the Allies, and to anyone who survived all of what went on.
Can you take a few minutes to relate to us the story of your family?
I can. My mom was born in Zagreb, Yugoslavia. And she had a brother, and my grandmother and grandfather. At the time, her parents refused to leave Yugoslavia and refused to leave their village. We're talking that she was born in 1939. So in Europe in 1939, things were much different than they are now. And the village was not, where she lived, was not in the city itself. It was actually a village just outside. They chose to stay. I have relatives at this point who have gone back and visited the site, and there is nothing left, and there was nothing left. I have a great aunt who actually had collected a couple pieces of china that were found left at where my mom's house would have been when she was a child, and sent them back to the United States, so I do have that left.
What happened to the house?
Oh, it was destroyed. I mean, they destroyed everything. What wasn't bombed was burned. There was nothing left. They pillaged everything and took everything. You know, it was wartime, so who's going to stop anybody from doing it? No one.
Did your family remember any confiscation of guns?
Yes. You know, it's kind of like, as this started, it was very gradual. So people did not notice things right away. It kind of started little by little, and it was a movement that started very slowly and kind of quietly through pubs and through small gatherings and groups where Hitler was talking. Yet it was not countrywide. It was small groups of people and, you know, radicals at that point. And if you think about it, that is what had started here. And if you look at it, the parallels are quite scary, because no one here is realizing, just as no one there was realizing. You know, as far as gun rights go, it's very easy to take a country and to take a population and to take control if they have no way to defend against it. So it was important for Hitler to make sure that the population had no way to go against him. You know, whether it be by a direct gun grab, or whether it be as now with taxation and smaller laws and more regulations, it all equates to the same thing in the end.
It does seem very insidious. In other words, it's not as overt what's happening now, but it's more what's covert, whether you're dealing with the Mueller investigation, whether you're dealing with these excessive taxation proposals. Basically, when you take people's money away, you bring them to your knees.
Of course.
To their knees.
Of course.
So,
you know, there's two things. The money, like you said, the other thing is fear. If you look at the mainstream media and what they say and what they're doing is causing fear in our country a fear of Donald Trump, a fear of his policies, a fear based upon lies. You know, propaganda media was outlawed in 1946 because propaganda media and things is what drove Hitler's agenda. So that was put in place to make sure that that couldn't be going on here. The issue, though, is that Barack Obama had repealed that and rescinded that. So at this point, the media is free to say and do whatever they want without any repercussion because those laws no longer are in place.
That's very
true. So you can push an agenda, you can push fear, you can push the gun rights, you can show parts of a shooting, you can say whatever you want about that shooting, and there's no repercussion.
You know, when I started to examine the rise of Hitler, I came up with about 10 items that I think are worth noting in the what I called his playbook. And a lot of that is being replayed right now. Let's, for example, take a look at the first one. Of course, television really was in its infancy. So we're really talking about radio and print media.
Yeah.
Everything was completely controlled. If you dissented, you disappeared.
Right.
We're seeing, I mean, would you say the media, how they've been handling the presidency is, I mean, they're talked about like 90% negativity.
Yes, and I do see that. I see that quite clearly. If you watch a lot of the networks, if you were to watch just, you know, a half an hour of one of these networks, you don't see actual reporting. What you see is almost like a talk show of opinion rather than actual fact.
Mm-hmm.
And it drives the public's way of thinking. It drives their perception. And perception is everything, because if they're perceiving the ideas put forth, which are similar to what happened in Germany, and if they're perceiving them as good and perceiving the things to stop that as bad, right there gets the ball rolling.
Absolutely. You know, one of the other things I had on my list of the 10, you know, unrights was that Hitler, he managed to basically do away with the court system by removing all liberal judges. Mm-hmm. So the only people that were judges were towing the party line. And
Correct. We
take a look at how the left, and we're talking elected officials, handled what their behavior was during the Kavanaugh hearings.
Yes.
I mean, they did not want this man on the court. They did
absolutely
everything to keep him off the court with, I believe, the same zeal that the Nazi Party did with their own judges. Do you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's kind of like, if you look at what the last administration did, and you look at the way they stacked the benches in the lower court, you know, everything is stacked with left-leaning justices who don't necessarily follow the law, but legislate from the bench.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't agree, then their ruling is based upon what they do agree with rather than what's in the book. And that's extremely dangerous. Because not only are they doing it, but Congress is allowing it, the people are allowing it, and people are electing officials who allow it. It's very dangerous. You know, at this point, the Trump administration trying to appoint judges and trying to fill spots, he's still doing that, and these spots should have been filled a year ago.
So they're being stonewalled.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. For justices, for judges, for all types of positions throughout the administration, you know, people who should already have appointments or have been confirmed, and they're not. And we're talking hundreds of positions. And it's stifling to the administration to try to progress if they don't even have the people to do the job.
I mean, how about some of these judges that their rulings affect the whole nation? What's that all about?
Absolutely. It affects the whole nation because the nation is so fired up on certain issues. You know, when it came to the travel ban and things like that, you know, people are so fired up on racism and Islamophobia and all kinds of things like that. You know, those issues themselves, if you looked back 10 years ago, those issues were not in the front lines. Those issues, it isn't that they totally did not exist, but they did not exist to the degree that they do now. I believe that the last administration was very divisive as far as race relations in our country. I think it set it back decades. And as far as migration and immigrants and things of that nature, our country was built on immigration. That's true. But it was built on legal immigration. And the way immigration took place when my family came over here versus now is night and day. My family came over, they had to have a sponsor. Yes. They weren't sponsored by the government. They were sponsored by other people who came before them and helped them get on their feet.
Exactly.
You know, and that's a vast difference from now.
That's true even of my own family. Somebody in the family had to sponsor and swear in an affidavit that they would take care of that person financially until they could get back on their feet.
Correct.
Now it's like
Correct.
You step one foot into American soil and it's like cradle to grave money. This didn't exist. And, you know, I think we're starting to see an incredible backlash. I mean, I notice on Twitter, everybody, particularly on the right, is really getting fired up about the green movement, particularly. So it's we're gonna examine. I want to get back into this, but we're gonna take a moment, just jump off the bus for a second, and then we'll be back in a minute.
The Out Loud perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutloud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Okay, we're back on the bus. I'm with Lori Mazurek. Lori, you were an equestrian.
You were
an equestrian. So
yes, I was.
I guess we shouldn't horse around to you, huh?
No, definitely not.
Okay. I want to circle back to a little more about your family and give us a little more history of what happened.
Okay. Basically, my mom was very young. She was born in 1939, and when they came to the United States was 1949. However, my uncle at the time, my mom remembers that he had just disappeared for a while, that he was just gone. And she was very young, so she didn't know why. Nobody talked about it. Nobody ever said anything about it. Not even later after the fact. No one ever mentioned why. But at that point in time, the Hitler Youth was in full swing. My uncle returned. He was still a child, obviously. I think he was 3 years older than my mother, I believe. He returned. Once he returned, my grandfather was separated from the family. So no one really talked about where he went or what happened with him either. And he was not reunited with my grandmother or my mom and uncle until after they had come here. He came here separate, probably about a month or two later. So it's almost in my mind as if the trade-off was my uncle came back to the family, yet my grandfather left. It's almost like there was a trade-off, because if the Hitler Youth was part of why my uncle was missing, then the only way he would have been out is with a trade-off. So I don't know for fact.
Are you saying that he sacrificed himself?
I think so. I don't know for fact, because it has been kept very, very quiet all these years. You know, it's like if I were to ask my great aunt, she would tell me that she doesn't know, or she would tell me, she told my mom that he was a fireman at some point and that he was working as a fireman and that's why he was separated. So it's all been very hush hush. I would believe that for my uncle to have been gone that long and then suddenly come back, and when he comes back, my grandfather be gone, leaving my grandmother to take her two children across Europe at the time during the war by herself, I'm believing there would have to be a sacrifice. There would have to have been a trade-off.
All right. Now let me just track this. They were in Zagreb, Yugoslavia, and we talked about a 10-year period. Did they go to Germany?
Yes, they did. During the fall of Berlin, my mom, my uncle, and my grandmother were in bomb shelters. People were forced to take in displaced families from other countries into their homes, and not all of them were too happy about that. So they weren't necessarily treating people very well when they did that. However, compared to a bomb shelter or being out on the street, you know, it's very cold, it's very dangerous, so that would be definitely preferable. My family was in camps, although which camps, I don't know.
My grandmother
always called them, she always called them war camps.
Right.
Whether they were concentration camps or not, I don't know. But I do know that with the concentration camps, when you got there, you were either sent one direction or the other. And they kind of evaluated who would be productive to the Germans to keep alive and to have work at the work camps, versus who was to be sent to the gas chamber, you know, whether they be older or not viable.
All right, I want to jump in just for a second about something you mentioned that's very interesting about the separation. And one of the things on the list was the ethnic cleansing that went on. In other words, he was trying to achieve an Aryan race. One race to control the world. In other words, if you were Jewish, if you were gay, if you had a deformity, if you had a mental deficiency, not only would they separate them out, but if you were a citizen, it was your duty to point them out. So what you ended up with was a society of people ratting out others. So if you weren't part of the underground, so to say, the resistance, that's a real resistance. You know, what we're seeing now is what I call fake resistance. How can anybody resist freedom? How could anybody resist safety? How could anybody resist proper voting? But resisting taking somebody's life or exterminating them, to have a resistance to that is real resistance. We're fed this narrative now.
It makes sense. Sure. Absolutely. You know, people are resisting in our country based upon a false narrative that has been taught through school, has been pounded into their head through media, and it didn't just start. That's the thing. If you look at it, it started back a while. So you have a generation where political correctness started to come in. And once it started to come in, it was easier to mold society, because now you have, again, fear of not being politically correct. So these people start to become politically correct. They teach their children to become politically correct. Once that happens, then it's very easy to feed in whatever you want to feed in. You know, for instance, if you think about Candace Owens and her saying, you know, about Black Lives Matter, she said, you know, I thought about the fact of Black Lives Matter, And she said at the time, it sounded great because, yes, Black Lives do matter. She says, but once I opened my eyes and looked at Black Lives Matter and what they truly represented and what they were truly doing, Black Lives Matter wasn't about Black Lives Mattering. Black Lives Matter was about division.
Mm.
And I think that at the time, you can see through conflict, that's exactly what it was.
I want to talk about another thing that I noticed on my list of the unrights. And this may raise a few eyebrows, but I want to talk about the rallies. Okay, because, you know, when we talk about like a Trump rally, you know, they would talk about him being like Hitler. In Germany, it was quite different. First of all, everyone had to go to the rally. Everyone. If you didn't show up to the rally, you disappeared. Yeah. The rallies that happen in our country now, a la Trump, these are voluntary. These are people that come together. I don't know if you've had a chance to go to a rally or a meeting where a lot of fellow Republicans. Tell me about
that. I had gone to the 100-day rally. That was held here in Harrisburg. And my husband and I went to the 100-day rally. It is completely voluntary. The people that go are going there because they love their president. They like what he's doing. The 100-day rally was different because the vice president and the president were both there, which, you know, that's very unusual. I'm glad I got to see this. This was, it's very positive when you're there. People are supportive and people like what they hear. The president, by the time you're done, you're enthusiastic and it feels good. It's a positive experience. And you don't have any obligation to be there. You go because you choose to go. And if you're choosing to go, that's a lot different than being forced to go to something that you may not even agree with.
Well, there was no dissent in Nazi Germany. None.
Oh, no.
Why when we see these historical news footages of the Berlin, you know, center square of the city, filled, packed. It's because you had to go. And everybody saluted. Everybody raised their hand on an angle. It was all propaganda. And my mother and her family were in London during the bombings.
Yeah.
Now, you know that France fell. Most of Europe fell. England, being an island, kind of survived. I mean, the Battle of Britain, but I understand, and I'm not sure if this is fairy tale or a myth, but it was my understanding that the British monarchy made a deal with Hitler that if they did invade and take over Great Britain, they would allow them to be the king and the queen. Now, it's also true that the British monarchy is really taken from German stock. So that may have been a deal made, but Churchill wouldn't have it. I mean, some of the things he did, it was just remarkable. But my mom had to take her young brother and sister into the subways every afternoon when the sirens went off with pajamas and pillows and waited till the all clear. So she grew up in fear. She was a Democrat most of her life. She's still alive. God bless her. But when Trump came along, she just fell in love. Because she was afraid that the country didn't really see what was actually going on. That the progressive left is the threat to our freedom, not the right.
That's correct. And my mother has seen the same thing. My mom had been a lifelong Democrat as well, as my father was prior to him passing in 2012. Both of my parents in 2008 voted a straight Republican ticket. Now, not as if John McCain would have been apprised by any stretch, I don't think. But in regards to what we did end up having for 8 years, I think it would have been better than that. Barack Obama had a way to rally the masses. He had a way of speaking that made you want to listen, not so much to what he said, but how he said it.
Yes.
And, you know, I had listened to a special on the History Channel with people who do voice analysis and characterizations of what makes people listen to things and what makes people not listen to things and how it's perceived. What she pointed out is that people such as Hitler, you know, who would stand and speak for hours, you know, prior to it being mandatory to listen to, people still came to listen to him freely. The same with Barack Obama. People came to listen to him freely. And what the two had in common was a certain cadence to their voice. And the cadence almost, it transfixes you to the speech, no matter what it is, the content.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that commonality existed between both of them. You know, I'm not saying subject matter necessarily, but the commonality of rallying the masses, the ability to get people behind what they're doing, be it right or wrong. I think that that is a common ground. If you listen to Hitler speak, I don't speak German, but there is a cadence to the voice. You know, was he screaming? Yes. But, you know, at the time, what kind of technology did they have to project what he was actually saying?
True.
Barack Obama wasn't screaming. However, if you look at how the people reacted to him versus how they reacted to Hitler, those things are very similar, you know, and that has to do with voice analysis and voice cadence and things like that. So when you think of that and you listen to politicians now, the ones who are successful in getting people behind them have the ability to do that.
Mm,
you know, Donald Trump has a certain way of speaking also, you know, and it is very easy to listen to him. And it's almost, he doesn't speak as a politician. He speaks more like a friend of yours or a neighbor would speak. And I think that that's why people can identify so easily, you know, with him or what he's saying, or find him likable, even though many do not. The ones who do, I believe it still comes down to how it's presented, you know. And I think a lot of policies, it's all in the presentation, you know, to make it either positive, negative, or acceptable, or favorable, or not.
You know, I want to just jump back into my list. And this is very interesting. And, you know, we might see some similarities now. One of the things that Hitler did do, he gave every German a free vacation for 2 weeks on the coast. They built lines and lines of hotels, and that people would come during their specified time, and they would get to have 2 weeks of leisure on the ocean. Mm-hmm. But of course, you had to attend a propaganda session before you got to do anything. He right. also offered that every German could have a Volkswagen at the cost of a motorbike. So mm-hmm. I look at some of the similarities today, let's call it, free education, you know, free medical insurance. A lot of these things are really also lures to the same end, to take control yeah. of the people.
Correct.
So so much is going on today that we're being bombarded daily. You know, the daily propaganda on the news, radio, papers. It's hard yeah. to dislodge a sitting president, but yeah. you think we'll see a movement to repeal the Electoral College?
If the Democrats had a win in 2016, I believe that they would have already began that process, if not completed it.
Wow.
I believe that certainly is something that they would love to do. I see that they have... talked about that in the House already, and the new Congress just came in. You know, you have people in there running articles of impeachment. You have people in there running the Green New Deal. You've got all these different radical policies coming out, one right after the other. And then you also see an unprecedented amount of freshman Congress people
yes.
who are in committees, with authority.
Let's get back to that, but we're going to jump off the bus for a minute, and okay. we'll be back in a minute.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep, but it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Okay, we're back on the bus. I'm with Lori Mazurek. Lori is a Bachelor of Political Science. We went over her family background in Eastern Europe. And I want to pick up again on some of the things on my list that Hitler was his playbook. And that had to do with the unions. First of all, there was only one union. It was the Nationalist Socialist Union. So that was it. You worked for the government. And it's interesting that one of the proposals that I've seen recently in the Green Movement was guaranteed federal jobs. Do you see a similarity there, Lori?
Oh, I do see a similarity, and I was thinking about that as you were just talking. I've listened to some things about that. When you think about the whole Green Movement, if you were to give everybody a federal job, then of course they would be working for the federal government. With that being said, they would be towing the party line. They would be basically in step, because what choice would they have? There would be no choice. It takes freedom. It takes choice away. The social programs put forth to say Medicare for all, education for all. Once you have that and once you participate, you are then tied to the government, and the government has you. There is nothing you can do about it. You know, you've given away your freedoms. You've given away your rights. And once you do that, you are in a position such as what the Germans did. I don't see a whole lot of differences.
There's not a lot of difference at all. I mean, could you imagine if she's talking about, even if you don't want to work, you have a job. I mean, what kind of incentive is there? You have a private business here in America. You hire people, you build something, you produce something, or you provide a service. I mean, and then you find out that, you know, your neighbor doesn't do anything and has a guaranteed income every month. I mean, you might say, well, hell with this. I'll stop my business and get on the dole. So The incentive to build your own business and wealth is at risk right now. And I want to talk about that in terms of our children to some degree. First of all, I want to go back to something you mentioned earlier about the Hitler Youth. This was probably the most insidious thing possible, is to indoctrinate a young mind, because this becomes the people of the future. And my fear is that this has been going on for like a couple of generations. I mean, when I went to college, there was protest, but there were things that were going on. There was the Vietnam War, there was Watergate. These were things that really upset the liberal mind of the government doing things either underhanded or illegally or against the will. And now it's flip-flopped the other way. All of these protesters, what I call the hippies, now they see nothing wrong with government colluding to hurt a president, or the FBI doing a dawn raid on an American citizen. You know, now all of a sudden it's allowable. So we have flip-flopped so far that I really worry what's going to happen, and are we really taking time to educate our youth as to the risk here? So
we are not.
You know, go ahead.
At this point, I've seen textbooks that are being used to teach in schools, middle school textbooks and things, and one in particular actually did talk about the 2016 election. And in that book, they talked about how Donald Trump unfairly won the election and actually stated that Hillary Clinton was the true winner because she had the most popular vote.
That
you know,
is
they
astounding.
Aren't teaching the Electoral College. They're teaching this, and I've read the text, and I'm thinking this is incredible. Because if you're teaching these children that at that age, and that's what they believe, that's what they're going to teach their children. And I think that it's been going on slowly over time for decades. You know, we're at a point now, it's kind of a tipping point. If you don't stop it, you're going to be in very big trouble, because these generations are your next leaders. And if they're your next leaders and that's what they believe, then the direction of our country is already paved. So it needs to be stopped. It needs to be looked at. It needs to be examined, and it needs to be out in the open.
I saw some statistics recently that looked at the study of history in 19, and it compared the progressive professors to conservative professors. In 1968, it was less than 3-1, progressive to conservative. The typical Ivy League school right now teaching history, the ratio is 30-1. So what chance do we really have? We would have to completely intercede in the whole education system. I mean, this poor Betsy DeVos, I mean, she's been lost in this whole thing. I mean, she got, you know, she's the education secretary. Have you seen Betsy DeVos in the last 3 years?
Very little.
Where is she? Where is Betsy DeVos? Okay, she's now selling Tupperware? You know, her husband, I think, owned Tupperware. I don't get it. Okay, we need to step in. We can't allow this to continue, because you're right. Now, hopefully, some of the younger people have a good head on their shoulders. Maybe it's not so offbeat as we think. But I do worry that these future voters, and then you have immigration, don't we? Then we have illegal immigration and what impact that's going to have. So when you take a look at a lot of the things that Hitler did, it was the playbook that we're running today. It's this playbook that they say Alinsky ran and Clinton, Hillary Clinton talks about. And all the people that have grown the last 30 years into this mess is starting to hit home. And the risks are great. I mean, 2020 is right around the corner. Do you see anybody challenging Donald Trump on the Republican side?
Not in a real credible way. I think that that would be a really difficult job. I think that there will be people who may try. I do not think that they will be successful. I could be wrong.
How about on the Democrat side?
On the Democrat side, I think your field is going to be huge. You know, when it comes to before primaries, I think your field is going to be ridiculously huge. I think you're going to have quite a few people who are throwing their hat in that really have no chance. You know, I don't see that Cory Booker has a chance to do anything. As far as even he's not going to get to the primaries by any stretch. You know, you have Elizabeth Warren, who right now seems to be, I would say, what's considered their strongest candidate.
Mm-hmm.
And if you listen to her and her policies and what she believes in and things of that nature, it's completely, if you listen to what she says and what she thinks and what she calls for wanting to reverse all of Trump's policies. She calls for wanting to make the union stronger again. She calls for wanting to take wealthy politicians out. And I think that's pretty hypocritical, all things considered.
Yes.
You know, she certainly isn't in the poverty level.
She's accumulated wealth, as have many others. I do not think it's going to fly.
I think the problem we have, too, on that side, well, the problem they have, I should say, there is no real platform. Not exactly. I mean, there's a platform that says, we hate Donald Trump. We hate anything he stands for. We hate anything he's done. Yet they don't have a proposal that's credible enough to sustain itself or even work. You know, you can't run a campaign on hating somebody. We learned that in 2016. It didn't work then. It's not going to work now.
I agree
with
you.
There has to be substance. And I don't see substance.
You know, I want to talk about youth. Because they're talking about a free education.
Mm-hmm.
And we know it's not going to be free. It's going to come from somewhere. Are we raising a generation of children that have basically been coddled from the time they've been born? They've been fed, they've been educated, they don't really have a job. I mean, I sold lemonade, okay? I delivered newspapers by 10 years old. I worked for my father. I used to help him deliver packages. He was in the frozen meat business, and we would deliver boxes of food different places. And I had to tag along with him on a Saturday when I wanted to play in the schoolyard. So I'm not seeing that today. I'm not seeing young people save. The other part is you can't even save. Go into a bank and try to open a savings account. They'll say, well, I'm sorry, Mr. Brookstein. You have to start an account with $25,000 and we'll give you 0.026%. So we're stuck. And when you can't earn money, when children don't save money, and then when they get their first job, then the government is going to want to tax it away, we're going to end up with a generation that nobody has any money. Right now, it's in the boomer generation, and really, to some degree, even in their parents' generation. You know, I've had people say to me, I bought a house on mommy's money. Mommy's dead. So where is the incentive now? Are we teaching the children to save a dime or to work and try to do something on the weekend? I just think it's going down a bad road for children.
I agree. And I think that the problem lies in accountability. I believe that, well, I have a friend who has worked in the cafeteria at a local school for 20 plus years, and she has watched, it's elementary school, and she has watched what's going on with the children in the school, not as far as what they're learning so much, but as far as the behavior and as far as what the school does about behavior. In the lunchroom, when you had a child in the past who was misbehaving or causing trouble or was disruptive or, you know, any of those things, they had a table where they would separate the child and put that child over there almost like a timeout. He ate lunch by himself, and the problem was rectified because there was a consequence for the action. Now at this point, they're no longer allowed to do that. The child that's disruptive or the children that are disruptive that are causing problems or running around misbehaving, they're not even reprimanded, let alone singled out, because what they say is, oh, well, if you set Johnny at the table over there, he won't feel included. I say, well, if Johnny's doing what Johnny's doing, he's already unincluding himself from everyone by doing what he's doing. So remove him, give him time to think about it, give him a consequence that he cannot play with his friends and eat with everyone else, in order to say, hey, this isn't right, and your actions will have a repercussion.
Well, I guess it sounds like they'll be perfect for a federal guaranteed government job because they can't be fired. They had never had a consequence for their behavior. And that feeds into the same thing. I think your point is well taken, that it's about responsibility. But the question is, have parents given up some of the reins on this? Because the way I grew up, my most important people that affected my life were teachers and coaches. And of course, my parents were the first line of defense. Teachers and coaches were the most influential people in my life. In fact, in some of the writings that I've done from, not so much in the Trump Chronicle, which is more political, but I have another book that's known as Rays of Light, that I talk about general issues, but I always went back to mentors and the people that had influence on lives. And I think we're losing some of that. What you're describing is that the lunch professional had more impact on seeing what was really going on than even the administration. Unbelievable.
I'd say that's absolutely correct, and it is unbelievable, because if the lunch lady is watching this over time, you can't tell me the administration doesn't know. Of course they know. But, you know, we're at a point now where the parents don't really discipline their children. You know, I'm not saying that it's a good idea to have corporal punishment in schools where that people should beat their children. I'm not saying that at all. But to say to a two-year-old and try to reason with a two- or a three-year-old to say, you know, you should break my candlesticks because that's wrong and this is mommy's, you can't reason with a two-year-old because a two-year-old's brain is not developed enough to comprehend that. You know, if you put a two-year-old in time out, they still aren't going to understand that concept. But, you know, if you have a child who's unruly and running through a store, destroying displays, I've worked in department stores before, and one child in particular, he had a dart gun. And what he was doing was shooting the dart gun at these pantyhose legs for display up on top of the shelf and knocking them off. The mother pretended as if she didn't see it. Eventually, she came up to check out with her sale items and this stuff. And the kid was still doing what he was doing. His older brother was there and the grandmother was there. The grandmother tried to reprimand the child. The mother got angry at the grandmother for reprimanding the child. The child actually laid down on the floor and started kicking and screaming on the floor to the point that security came to find out if there was a problem. And well, if that's acceptable, that's insane.
I know. It's not acceptable. But to tell you the truth, I've been in those situations with my own children. And as embarrassing and as unruly as it gets, sometimes they're unavoidable. But your point is a good one. So, you know, just on track and back. Go ahead.
I think at that point, when you have a child that is that out of control, I don't believe that a smack on the butt is going to scar them for life.
No.
I'm not saying beat the crap out of them. I got smacked on my butt when I was little. It didn't damage me, but I did learn that, you know, there are some things that are just not acceptable. They're over the line. They're incorrect. And if you do them, there will be a consequence, whether it be a smack on the butt, whether it be I was grounded, whether it was taking away a toy.
You
or
know,
canceling a camping trip.
What just jumped out at me when you said that, because for some people, if they saw somebody, you know, giving their child a spank, they would be outraged. But to murder an unborn child right before they're born, that's no problem. That's supportive. It's like, have we gone completely wacko?
I feel as if we have, because just yesterday, somebody on Twitter had posted a video of late-term abortion. And I watched it, and I have to say, every hair on my body stood up. I was absolutely appalled. You know, the baby that they were extracting was almost full term and had every chance of having a perfectly fine life. You know, it is murder. I've seen another video from New York where the child was taken out still in the amniotic sac, and they murdered the child, and it's legal. That's insane. Because if you can't swat your child on the butt, yet you can kill a child.
The same experiments went on during the Nazi regime by Dr. Joseph Mengele. They tortured
and
experimented. Yeah, go ahead, and I just want to, you know, finish off on that note, because we have a constitutional republic. We have a constitution. We have a Bill of Rights. They took away all rights in Nazi Germany, and to think that our president embodies that is just, that makes my hair go on end. So
that makes me very angry.
Yes. Yes.
My mom, when she was little, because of all of what went on in the camps and because of the experimentation and because of all of what you've just mentioned, my mom, up until probably when she became a young adult, was afraid to take medicines, was afraid to go to the doctor, was afraid of all of these things because of that type of thing going on. And she was young, but she witnessed it. She was young, but she saw it. Those are things in your formative years that you're not going to easily forget.
No.
And it's quite disgusting. You know, many times people say, well, you know, where did Hitler get his ideas to exterminate the Jews? And where did he get his manifesto? Well, if you look at what Margaret Sanger had written and what her intentions for Planned Parenthood were, her original intention was to exterminate the black population of our country.
Yes.
So it was used then by Hitler to form what he chose to do with the Jewish population. So Planned Parenthood still exists. Hillary Clinton comes out saying she supports Margaret Sanger and that she was a brilliant woman. What does that say about the politicians that agree with Hillary Clinton?
Yet Trump is characterized as the Nazi. Well, on that note, I want to, first of all, I want to thank you, Lori, for joining me today. And some of these issues really stretch our brains. Love, Ray Ray, and a poem.